We are beginning the book of Daniel. What? Yeah, we always do. We're beginning the book of Daniel, and we will go back to the intro after we do a little bit more of the, a little bit to understand what we're talking about. Then we'll go back to the intro. I would much rather get moving. We'll cover the beginning of the book, and then we'll go back to the intro. I think it's pointless to start talking about who Daniel was till we learn a little bit from the book about who Daniel was, and then we'll go back and speak about his lineage. So the Navi tells us in Daniel, this is a book of Ketubim, one of the books of writings, that when Nebuchadnezzar captured Jerusalem, so he brought the wealth of Jerusalem out to Babylon. He brought it before his idols. He wanted to show, look, I captured the gods of Israel. Come, I bring them subservient before my gods. And then Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, told his chief officer, his Ashpenaz, he told him, I want you to bring me perfect children, perfect Jewish children who are very intelligent, who can be taught, and they will be educated with our best education, and then they will ultimately be my advisors. Now here we encounter the first question which is going to trouble us throughout the book of Daniel, and that is the question of what is the word saris? Saris literally means a eunuch, a person who was castrated. And in ancient times, as we will see in the book of Esther, it was customary that whoever was frequently present in the king's chambers would be castrated to ensure that nothing happened between him and all the king's women. So the king had many eunuchs, many servants who were his eunuchs. And we are going to see that Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are also referred to as sarisim. And there is a discussion among the commentaries, were they castrated? Because they were in the king's palace, even though they were taken in as youth, we're going to see they continued being his advisors. So were they castrated? Was this part of what happened to them? Or is the word saris also a borrowed term for anyone who was the king's servant? And there are opinions going both ways. So the first area where we encounter this question is here in the very beginning, where the king calls his Ashpenaz, his Rav Sarisav, the head of his eunuchs or the head of his servants. And this is a question that's ongoing throughout the book, a machlokas rishonim. The different commentaries have different opinions as to whether every saris was literally castrated. So he tells him, I want you to bring me Jewish children, children from noble descent, children from the king's family, and I want you to bring me children who are good looking and intelligent, who could learn well and understand, and they won't start joking or start talking or sleeping or going to the bathroom. They'll be able to contain themselves in my presence, and then I want them to be educated, teach them our language, and take care of them. And the king also ordered him to give them set food from the king's food and set wine from the king's wine. And he said, 3 years will educate them and raise them in my palace. And at the end of 3 years, we'll bring them before me and I'll choose advisors from among those children. So among the children were four children named Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And the children were all given names that were Babylonian names. Daniel was renamed as Belshazzar. Bel was the idol of Babylon, and Shazzar is wisdom. And Hananiah was named Shadrach, and Mishael was named Meshach, and Azariah was named Abednego. Now, Daniel decided that he doesn't want to eat pat akum. He doesn't want to eat non-Jewish bread, and he doesn't want to drink stam yenam, to drink the wine of the non-Jews. The Torah says you're not supposed to drink wine that they libated to their gods. And the rabbi said, even wine that you don't know what they did with, you have to suspect, being that they're idol worshippers, that they might have served idols with that wine. So Daniel didn't want to drink the king's wine. And so he asks the head, please, I don't want this food. So he finds favor in the eyes of the head, and he tells him, I'm scared of the king. He clearly told me what to give you to eat and drink, and if he sees you, you and your friends, looking worse than the other kids, he'll kill me. So Daniel says, try us out. Let's try for 10 days and see if we look worse than the other kids. And he agreed. And after 10 days, they looked better than all the other kids. So their waiter used to take their delicious food and wine that the king had set aside for them. And he'd give them some kind of cholin, some kind of beans. And the four of them excelled more than all the other kids. And Daniel excelled in understanding visions and understanding dreams. And at the end of the 3 years, so the king interviewed all the children, and he found that the top four of the children were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And so they were appointed to be the king's advisors. And whenever he needed advice, whenever he wanted someone to help him out, he found these children to be 10 times as good as all his other advisors and his sorcerers. And Daniel remained in that position past the kingdom of Nebuchadnezzar, going through kingdom after kingdom till the first year of the king Koresh. Now, one of the difficulties in the book of Daniel is knowing which king we're talking about when. Because many kings were called Koresh. It seems it was like Mr. President, like Pharaoh, like Avimelech. It was a name that was given to many kings in Persia. And many kings were called Ahasuerosh. And many kings were called Daryavish. So the names that we have as markers to know who was whom, well, they're names that are repeated for different kings. So the commentaries have a hard time, and the Gemara already discusses, and there are different opinions, and we will discuss it at greater length as we continue the book. But now that we've been introduced to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, now we could do rewind and introduce the book of Daniel. In the book of Daniel is occurring between the first and second temple, as we saw. Towards the end of the first temple, there was a very righteous king named Chizkiyoh. And Chizkiyoh had many miracles happen on his behalf. He brought the Jewish people back. In his day, he ensured that all the children learned how to keep Torah and mitzvot. And during his reign, the 10 tribes were exiled. Sancheiriv came and exiled the 10 tribes. What? What? Chizkiyoh was very pious. Chizkiyoh ensured that all the children knew Torah. He had his police force out ensuring that people were keeping Torah and not going after the pagan gods. There were jokers in the generation who tricked his police force, and they'd hide idols throughout their house, and they continued their idolatrous ways. But Chizkiyoh at least tried. He tried ensuring that the children learned Torah and that the adults kept Torah. And he was very righteous. And while he was king, the 10 tribes were exiled. Sancheiriv came and exiled the 10 tribes. And then Sancheiriv came and tried to capture Jerusalem. And he almost succeeded, but God made a miracle and saved Jerusalem. And Chizkiyoh could have been the Mashiach had he said Shirah. Our sages said had he composed a song in honor of God in thanks for that salvation, he would have been the Messiah, but he didn't. And then, when that miracle happened, so he asked for a sign that the miracle would happen, and the sign was that the sun set late, 10 hours late. The sun moved back 10 notches on the sundial. Now, the Babylonian king was very shocked. He took his afternoon nap, and when he woke up, it was earlier than when he had gone to sleep. So he told his servants, what's wrong with you? I told you to wake me after such and such a time, and I slept through the night to the next morning. You let me sleep almost 24 hours, almost a donut, as they used to say in yeshivas. How I'm going to kill you guys. So the servant said, no, we didn't do that. You slept the exact amount of time you wanted to. But in honor of Chizkiyah, the king in Israel, God made the sun go back 10 notches. So the Babylonian king was so impressed, he sent messengers to Chizkiyoh, the Jewish king.
And Chizkiyahu, the Jewish king, was so proud that the Babylonian king is sending him kudos, that he took them and he showed them throughout the temple and he showed them everything. And the prophet comes to him and he asks, who are these people that came to you? So Chizkiyahu says, oh, they value how righteous I am, what God did for me. They value the miracle I had. So I showed him around. The prophet asks him, and what'd you show him? So Chizkiyahu says, I showed them everything. I showed them the temple, the holy. I showed them everything. So the prophet tells him, well, God has a word for you. God says, because you did this, you showed them everything. You took them into the temple. You showed them everything. Well, everything you showed them, they're going to take. This Babylonian empire is going to take everything to Babylon. And your great-great-grandchildren, you should know your offsprings, will be castrated and will be eunuchs in his temple, in the temple of Babylon. Those grandchildren are these. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are the great-great-grandchildren of Chizkiyahu the king. The book of Daniel was written by Daniel during the period between the first Beit HaMikdash and the second Beit HaMikdash. And as we continue, we'll get a better understanding of the purpose of the book of Daniel, or at least on the surface level. Uvishnat Shtayim, let's continue. Year number 2, Lemalchut Nebuchadnezzar. It is year number 2 after the destruction of the temple. That is when Nebuchadnezzar was really considered king. He conquered Jerusalem. He had dreams. And he was very upset. And he couldn't sleep. And he called all his wise men and sorcerers and magicians. And he told them, you know, yeah.
Sennacherib was an Assyrian.
Correct.
And that's not Babylonian.
Correct. So the king calls in his advisors and he said, I had a dream and I'm very upset. I want to know what I dreamt. So the Chaldeans, the king's advisors, they say in Aramaic, and from here for the next 6 chapters, the book is going to be in Aramaic. They say, our king, you should live forever. Tell us the dream and we'll tell you what it means. So the king roars and he says, I forgot the dream. If you don't tell me the dream and its explanation, I'm going to cut you up to limbs and turn your houses into dumps. If you do tell me the dream, I'll give you gifts, I'll give you wealth, I'll give you honor. You'll get so much. Just tell me the dream and what it means. So they say, tell us the dream and we'll tell you what it means. So he says, now I know that not, you certainly deserve to be killed. You see, I forgot the dream. I told you I can't remember the dream. And you're still asking me for the dream. If you don't tell me the dream now, then you will certainly be killed. I will definitely destroy you. I'm giving you till nightfall, till the times change. Tell me the dream. And if you could figure out what the dream was, I know for sure you also got the explanation right. So now they're pressured. They got till nightfall or they're dead. So they say, there's no human being on dry land who could tell the king what you're asking. No one could do this. Look around. There's never been a king or ruler or any person in power who asked for something like this. And what you're asking is very difficult. And there's no one else around who could tell you the explanation. The only one who could tell you such a thing are the angels that don't live among mankind. Our sages say when they said "Va'achoran lo yitai," and there is no other who could give you the answer, our sages say the chet and hey are sometimes interchangeable. What they were saying, Perek Beis Pasuk Yud Aleph, "Va'aharon lo yitai," and a descendant of Aaron the Kohen is not around. You destroyed the temple. You no longer have a high Kohen, a Kohen Gadol, who could tell you the answer to something like this. Only Kohen Gadol could answer a question like this. So the king got really upset. You guys are nuts, he said. You told me to destroy the temple. You told me to kill the Kohanim. Now you're telling me that that was the source of such wisdom? That only in the temple could you find someone who could tell me such a secret?
So the king said, kill all my wise men.
So his executioner goes out and starts killing all of Babylonian's wise men. And it's Daniel and his friend's turn. And Daniel asks the chief executioner, what is this decree to kill all the wise men? So the chief executioner, his name was Arioch, he told Daniel what's going on. So Daniel went before the king and he said, give me a little bit of time, I'll tell you the explanation. And Daniel went home. Seems like he was already an adult when this story happened. Or else it would have been his parents' home, I don't know. He went back home and he calls his friend Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, told them what's going on, and he asked Davin that God should reveal to me the secret so that we don't all get killed with the wise men of Babylon. So Daniel has a vision and the secret is revealed to him. And Daniel blesses God. What does he say? Yehe Shmei Rabbah Mivorach Lolam Lomei Olmaya. You want to see the source for that? Look at Daniel Beis Chaf. He says, May Hashem be blessed, may the name of Hashem be blessed from world to worlds, that the wisdom and might is His. He's the one that changes times. He removes kings. He sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise men. He gives knowledge to those who know. He knows the secrets. He knows the depths. He knows what's in the darkness. And all light is with Him. Nehorai Meshrei. You, the God of my forefathers, to you I thank and praise for the wisdom and might you've given me. And now you've given me what I've asked of you. You've let me know what the king asked. So Daniel goes over to the chief executioner and he says to him, stop killing. Notice he doesn't go to the king first. He first goes to the executioner. Stop killing the wise men. Bring me before the king. I'll tell the king the explanation. I'll tell the king the solution. So Arioch quickly brings Daniel before the king and he says, I found a man from the Jews you exiled that could tell you the explanation. Seems to take credit. The king tells Daniel, can you tell me the dream I saw and its explanation? So Daniel tells the king, he says, the secret you want, wise men, sorcerers, magicians, all the different types of advisors you have, they can't tell you. But there is a God in heaven, and He reveals secrets. And in this dream, He really let you know what would be at the end of time. Your thoughts are what went up to your mind in your sleep. You were concerned what would be after your kingdom, and the one in heaven who reveals all secrets, He let you know what would really be after your kingdom. Yeah. Yeah. And I, says Daniel, I'm not translating word for word. I'm translating the story and more or less word for word if you're following the English. It's close to word for word. It would be too tedious for you if I translated it word for word. And for that, you could just open the Tanakh. And I, says Daniel, I don't know this solution because of the wisdom that's within me, that I'm smarter than all living creatures. I know it because God told me. You, the king, what you saw at night, you saw a huge statue. And this statue had a huge basis, and the statue was standing opposite you. And it looked awesome. Now this statue could gold, and its chest and its arms were of silver, and its feet were of metal, and the bottom of his feet, a stone suddenly appeared on its own. You saw a stone fall down and mash this statue down to its feet, and it completely crushed. There's got to be a better word. Limchot. I don't know how you say that in English. Limchot. When you take a metal and you just flatten it. It compressed it. Yeah. Completely compressed this idol. Thank you to our South African. All of us Americans, we all, our English goes to pot. Okay. He says, you saw this stone completely compressed this idol, and it was compressed till it was like a little piece of chaff, and the wind blew it away, and there was no remnants of that huge idol. And then that stone that had come down and smashed the idol became a huge mountain, and it filled all of the earth. That's the dream. And now the explanation I will tell my king. You, the king of kings, has given you a powerful kingship. And your rulership expands over all of humanity and all of the wild animals, the birds. You rule over everything. You are that head of gold. And after your time, there will arise another kingship, another kingdom, who is less than you. And then there'll be a third kingdom, which is less than them. And then there'll be a fourth kingdom that will be strong like metal. And just like metal is what you use to bang and flatten things, so too this kingdom. And this kingdom is really going to take over all the other things like metal does. And that which you saw, that its feet were, and its fingers, some were of earthenware, some were of metal. It's going to be a divided kingdom. And the rulers of even the weak in that kingship, even the weak in that kingdom, will be strong over other people. He's going to be powerful. So even the weak kings among that kingdom will be strong. Where are we? Just a second. Okay. And that which you saw, that the earthenware mixed with the metal, that's a reference to the fact that this nation will marry other nations. They won't mind intermarrying, but they won't really cling to the other nations. Just like metal doesn't really fuse with earthenware. And in the days of these kings, then God will erect a kingdom that will be everlasting. A kingdom that will never be damaged and will never relinquish its throne. And that kingdom you will see grind and compress all the other kingdoms, and that kingdom will be forever. Just as you saw that stone that came down and smashed all the other metals of the idol, smashed the idol till it was nothing, that's what's ultimately going to happen. There will be a final kingdom. God revealed to you what will be at after your time, your dream is true, and once you know that I've told you the dream, you also know that my explanation is true. The king fell on his face, bowed to Daniel, and he wanted to offer a sacrifice. He said, we have to libate before him. He is a god. And the king says to Daniel, now I know it's true. Your God is the God above all gods. He is the master of kings. He knows the secrets. If you were able to reveal such a secret. And so the king made Daniel great in his kingdom. He gave him a lot of gifts. He made him in charge of all of Babylon. He made him in charge of all the wise men. And Daniel asks for assistance, that his three good friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, will be appointed to be with him. And Daniel was steady at the king's gate. Now Nebuchadnezzar is concerned. What did he just hear? He just heard that he is going to lose his throne, and that who's going to be The ultimate king is their final kingdom. So he fears the Jews. So what does Nebuchadnezzar do? He says, what I have to do is cause the Jews to sin. If I cause the Jews to sin, I'll bring them down, and God will leave them, and they won't be this ultimate kingdom. So what does Nebuchadnezzar do? He erects a huge golden idol. And that idol, the Pasuk says, it was 60 amos wide. It was 60 amos high, I'm sorry. And they had huge foundations for it. And he erected this idol in the valley of Dura in Babylon. Now, what's special about the valley of Dura? The valley of Dura is where there were many dead Jews. It was where it was like going to the concentration camps to a mass grave. So he brought the Jews to the valley of Dura to a mass grave. And they're standing next to the bones of all their brethren that have been murdered. And now Nebuchadnezzar gathers all his leaders and he makes a party in front of this idol. There's all the aristocracy of Babylon. And he's making a holiday in honor of the beginning of the service before this idol. And then he says, we're going to blow the trumpets. All of my citizens have to come. And he ruled over all the Jews at the time. All the Jews were there. And he says, when my band starts playing, everyone has to bow to the idol. Nebuchadnezzar's plan. God hates idol worship. And if the Jews serve idols, they leave God. Maybe God will leave the Jews. And then the Jews, they won't take the throne from him. And ultimately, he'll keep the throne. And Nebuchadnezzar has this huge fire burning. And he says, whoever doesn't bow to my idol will be thrown into that furnace. So all the different nations and nationalities are there. And the band starts playing. And everyone bows down to the idol. Now, who doesn't bow down? Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The top three advisors. Daniel wasn't forced to come to that session. So, people come to Nebuchadnezzar, and they tell him, you made a law that everyone must bow to that idol. And whoever doesn't will be thrown into the furnace. There are some Jews who you gave them positions of leadership, and they didn't bow. They don't care what you say. So Nebuchadnezzar got very upset. And he summons Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah walk in with their royal clothing. Chazal say from here we learn, even when a person is being persecuted, and it looks like it's the end, he shouldn't show up in tatters. He should show up standing firm, standing proud. They thought they were about to be killed. They thought these were their last breathing moments. And yet they showed up in their royal clothing. So the king summons them. And he tells them, let's work something out. I want you to bow down to that idol. So it won't be real idol worship. Let's do something. You guys have to bow. And Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah think to themselves. They say, why was it necessary for the frogs to jump into the ovens alive? God told the frogs, go bug the Mitzrim. And then God told the frogs, and jump into the ovens alive. Must be that even to the onlooker, it is important to show we do what God wants. It's not enough that in our hearts we do what God wants. So they said if the frogs jumped into the ovens and they knew they were cooked alive, so certainly if the Torah says it openly, the Torah says that the frogs, uvemisharotecha uvetanurecha, the Pasuk says, the frogs will jump into the ovens, and the frogs kept up that decree. So we, for sure, we have to be willing to give up our lives. So Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are summoned before the king, and he says, we're going to give you one more chance. We'll play the band, and if you guys don't bow, we're going to throw you into the furnace. And who's the God that's going to save you from my hands? Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah answer, and they tell him, Nebuchadnezzar, we don't have to answer you. That question, we don't need to give you an answer. There is a God that we serve, and He could save us from the furnace and from your hands.
And even if he doesn't save us, you should know that there is a God, and we will not serve your idol. We will not bow to your golden idol that you established. And Nebuchadnezzar got very upset, and he turned red in the face, and he yelled out, "Heat up that furnace 7 times as hot as it was." And they heated up the furnace, and he brought huge soldiers. No one could approach the furnace. So they bound Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and he ordered the soldiers to throw them in. No one could come close to the furnace, it was so hot. So they bound them in their royal clothing, and they threw them into the furnace. So Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, because they didn't bow, they were thrown into the burning furnace. Chazal tell us they stood up to this test because it was a 1 second test. Because the question was, do you bow or don't you bow? Chazal say, Ilmaleina gduha, if they would have tortured Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, as great as they were, and we all know the history, we all know for generations we're talking about Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, even people who don't learn the book of Daniel, they know that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they said, we will not bow to the idol, and they were thrown into that burning furnace. But Chazal tell us, had they been tortured, they would have broken. A person could stand up to a certain amount, but torture is something that Chazal seemed to say that a person can't stand up to. At some point, a person could be broken with torture. So the Torah tells us a Jew should rather give up his life than transgress Avodah Zarah, idol worship, Gilui Arayas, living with one of the women that's an Isul Karet, or Shfichut Amim, or murdering someone. And Chazal say that's a question of giving up one's life for these mitzvot. But when it comes to torture, Chazal say, people won't necessarily stand up to it. Kol kavod to whoever does, but Chazal say, even Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, had they been tortured, they would have caved in. So here there's a discussion. Does this teach us that for torture, a person may cave in? Or, as we discussed earlier, here, Nebuchadnezzar said, let's make a compromise. Let's do something that seems like you're doing idol worship. And they said, no, we can't do something that seems like idol worship before the Jewish people. We're not allowed to do that. So on that compromise, had they tortured them, they would have broken. So we're not learning halacha here. These are halachot we do have to learn, but for now, so we have to go over to Rabbi Yana Bait class.